This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm filling in for Larry. And today we are going to be talking about baking, something that I love. Our guest is Kim Nelson. She is the founder of Daisy Cakes. You might have seen her on ABC's Shark Tank or one of many other TV shows. Kim uses her family recipes to make cakes that are shipped around the country, and now she has a cookbook that she shares her recipes in for cakes, pies, cookies, and a lot more. Do you have a question about baking? What about starting a baking business or even writing a cookbook? We'd love to hear from you, so give us a call. The number, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Kim Nelson, hi.
Hey, Jill. How are you doing?
I'm really doing well. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. I just took my hairnet off. I'm sitting down in the icing room, taking a little breather, and I'm happy to be able to spend it with y'all. Thank you.
Well, just the fact that you have an icing room is pretty special.
Oh, it feels so good in here. We keep it on about 55 degrees, so it really, on a hot day like today, it's lovely.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I'm sure you've told people your story lots of times, but for those who aren't familiar, why don't you tell us about Daisy Cakes and how you started it?
Well, my mother and I started it in June of 2009, so we're 9 years in now, and we started off just, you know, thinking we'd bake and sell, you know, 1,000 cakes a year, 2,000 cakes a year, and heading out to some junior league shows for holiday shows around the Southeast more than anywhere else. And we started out mostly with a bigger customer base in Louisiana, and things were going along just fine and fairly easily. And then a friend of mine called me up from, he was from college, and he called me to tell me about this new TV show called Shark Tank and said, you know, you should really try to get your cakes on that show. I'd never heard of it, and I said, okay. I went straight, hung up the phone and went straight to ABC.com, Shark Tank Casting, and back in the day, because I was on for season two, so they only ever had season one, all you had to do was upload your name and your age, website, product description, and a picture, which I did, and the casting girl called me the next day.
Wow.
And that started the summer of 2010. It was a very long process back then. I don't think it's quite so long anymore. But the interviews and the getting your pitch down from 3 minutes to 2 minutes to 1 minute, and finally Labor Day weekend, getting the email that I was deemed worthy to come out and pitch in the tank.
Amazing.
It's been it's indescribable. When it first happened, right after the show aired, it was like, I felt like we should have been a part of a reality TV show. We should have had cameras here filming the chaos, because it was unlike anything. The Shark Tank had not, you know, they didn't know what to expect, and it was crazy.
I can't imagine what that was like. Now, I have seen that clip on your website. I can't stand the stress, because no one wanted you till the end. And
there, I know, wasn't that incredible? And I promise, I know this, you know, people think, oh, well, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But I truly, honestly, in my heart, never doubted that I was not going to get a deal. I really felt it, you know, all of my being, that I would come out of there with a deal. And thank goodness, Barbara saved the day, and has been a great business partner ever since.
So she's still working with you?
Yeah, she is. Oh. Absolutely. Her entrepreneurs, have access to her if we need it, and for great promotional, you know, stuff that we might be doing. And then also, she has a Shark Tank business person, which all the sharks do, that you have, you know, access to during normal business
hours. Sure. Now, your cakes went from, what, 1,000, you said, to how many?
We're now over 100,000 cakes since
Amazing.
The inception of the company. So, yeah, we've sold in 2010 2,000 cakes, and the night that we aired, we got over 2,000 orders, and that was with the phone lines crashing,
I'm sure.
You know, the website crashing, phone lines blowing up. I mean, it was something to experience. I tell you, it was that crazy, wild Shark Tank effect.
Sure. Now you've come through that, and you've got things like clockwork now, I'm assuming, right?
Well, just when you think.
Just when you think. Sure, sure. Now explain a little bit, how do you get a cake? I mean, these are layer cakes with frosting. How do you get that to somebody without it being a mess?
Well, we freeze the cakes, and we ship them in styrofoam shippers with dry ice.
Okay.
So it's like shipping a rock. So we basically bake this week for what's the orders for next week.
Okay.
So we're not, so you kind of have to, especially the holidays, Valentine's Day, Easter, Mother's Day, you know, some busier times of the year. We need everybody to, like, go ahead and get your orders in.
Sure.
Not that we're going to bake your cakes then, but we need to know the week prior what mm-hmm. we need to bake. And if that's working, you know, extra hours and weekends to do it, then that's how we operate during those busy times of the year. So we bake them on a Monday. On a Tuesday, we ice the cakes because we freeze the layers. Then we ice the cakes on Tuesday, freeze them again, and on Wednesday mornings they get wrapped up and boxed and ready to be shipped out the next week, of course. And then on Wednesday we start the baking process again. Thursday we ice the cakes. Friday we box them up. And then everything's ready to go for the following week.
That is amazing. And
with
these,
dry ice in the shipping container.
Sure. Yeah. And this is a real personal. I mean, people are actually frosting these by hand, right?
Yes, we do. Oh, yes. We have two 20-quart Hobart mixers. We mix the, you know, we have the upstairs kitchen where we mix the cakes, and that's, you know, the raw ingredients. And then down here in the icing room, we, you know, base all, everything's small batch and done by hand. And we all have our little icing tables, and everybody has their certain icing knife that we like to use. And yeah, we go to town. We even make the daisies that go on top of the cake.
You do? Oh my gosh, because you have a little daisy on all of them.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, that's so great. It's those little touches that make a huge difference.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, you come from a really long line of great cooks, and in the foreword of your book, you talk about those ladies as having an attitude of abundance. Now, what did you mean by that?
Well, and I think I still have that. It's just a generational thing, and my children too. I see it in them. It's just there's, you know, always, you always want there to be a gracious plenty on the table, or if you're serving somebody, you want there to be more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
And just that, and their abundance of their whole attitude of life is if they never felt like they didn't have enough. And they were just very, you know, my granddaddy's worked in the mill, the cotton mill, and my grandmother's, you know, they all had gardens, and they raised their own chickens and their cows, and it was very rural part of you know, the country where they lived down in Union, and just very simple but very, you know, happy, very positive
right.
way of life.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I kind of came from the same kind of background, but up north.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
it is all over.
I
just remember one of my fondest memories is going barefooted in chicken pens. I mean, in the summertime, that's just what you did. Never wore shoes.
That's right. Me either. Yeah, those cow patties. I remember. So what made you decide to put these family recipes that you're using for your cakes in a cookbook? I mean, aren't you afraid that people are going to make their own cakes and not buy them from you?
Well, you know, that's what I think some people will absolutely want to make their own, but then sometimes you want to send a gift to somebody.
Sure.
And you know, if it's a company that has it down for sending gifts, then you know we're certainly capable of doing that too. And sometimes it's just fun to bake a cake, right?
It is. I love
make your
baking
house
cakes.
Smell good.
It does, and it's a work of art. It really, really is.
And a labor of love.
It is. Yes. Our guest today is Kim Nelson, the founder of Daisy Cakes, and we're talking about her new cookbook, Daisy Cakes Bakes: Keepsake Recipes for Southern Layer Cakes, Pies, Cookies, and More. What questions do you have about baking? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. Are you can email us too. Our email address is ideas@WPR. And we do have Tom on the line who has a question for you, Kim. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we help you with?
Okay, I do a lot of cooking and baking because my wife's not crazy about it. And I and my grandchildren on a gluten-free diet. I make nut roll with half a pot of butter, regular flour, yeast, and sugar, and a little vanilla. But when I notice when I use the gluten-free flour, it's much stiffer and harder to roll up very nicely. I asked because I even tried Betty Crocker. They didn't know what to do.
Oh, really? Now, I don't know if we can mention the name of a company that...
Oh, sure. Yes, you can.
I make two gluten-free cakes. I make a carrot cake, which is our exact carrot recipe, and then we do a chocolate cake. This just a smidge different, but it's gluten-free, and we use Orley, O-R-L-E-Y. They make a baking flour that is as smooth as silk. I mean, it is phenomenal, and that works beautifully, and I've served it to people, and they, not to trick them, but they've tasted it alongside, you know, regular cake, and they could not tell the difference. It is absolutely the best flour out there.
Oh, okay. And again, that name was?
Orly. Blends. It's Blends, B-L-E-N-D-S, Blends by Orly.
Okay. And do you substitute that one for one?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Good question, Jill, yes.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a really easy substitute then. Well, good.
It works. It's just awesome. I love it. And I just keep it in the freezer because we only sell those, you know, not as much because it's a lot more expensive. It's probably about five times more than regular flour.
Right.
But, you know, keep it in the freezer and just pull it out and use it. And it works beautifully for baking.
Great. Well, Tom, good luck with that. Hopefully that'll solve your problems. And I know I like to keep my flour in my freezer, too, because...
Bugs.
Yeah, whatever, you know, if I don't use it, especially the specialty flours.
Yes, and it's expensive.
It is, and Tom,
what a lucky wife you have if you do all the baking and cooking for her.
Yeah,
wow.
For
India.
Sure. You know, I have to tell you, I want to make just about everything in your book. It is wonderful. How did you decide what to put in and what to keep out?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm such a, like a... I guess a classic overachiever. So they said, Random House, they said, we need about 100 recipes. We want to put 100 recipes in there. And I was like, okay. So when I started going through things and the mama's cigar box of recipes and my books of recipes of, like, you know, notebooks of my grandmother's recipes and handwritten scribbly stuff, I thought, well, okay, so I submitted 124 recipes. And I just let them whittle it down because I just couldn't decide. It was really a tough decision because I feel so, like, I'm bonded and have a personal, relationship with my recipes.
Oh, sure.
And I, you know, just wanted everybody to have a little bit of all the goodness.
Yeah, especially when they're your family recipes. How do you cut one out? So it must have made it easier for you.
And then when I felt like I had to, you know, give, proper credit to both grandmothers and my great aunt Daisy, and I didn't want to leave Mama out. And
Yes, you don't. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you put the cookbook together. What will the reader actually, and I read cookbooks, I don't know about you, but what will the reader actually find in the book?
Well, this, I love that they, Clarkson Potter asked that I put a little story, a little header story up front of every recipe, which, you know, is kind of like my endearing memory that went along with it, which I really appreciated, you know, getting to do that. And because I like to know why, you know, people love a certain recipe, so it was fun to get to share that. And so they'll get, you know, a little stories, a little behind the scene, I guess, of how I grew up and how I grew up baking and doing the things, you know, that I did as a little girl. And then there's also, you know, a nice variety of recipes that, one, you can bake right away, or if you want to, you know, bake something to have later, you can pop lots of those in the freezer, so they'll find, you know, little baking tidbits on, little hints, helpful hints on some of the recipes, too.
Yeah, those helpful hints I thought were really interesting, too. I mean, just reading through those, I learned things that I never thought about that. What a great idea.
And freeze those cake layers before you put the frosting on them because you don't get crumbs in your frosting.
Huge difference because, yeah. Well, do you have to put an actual skim coat on then, or do you just...
No.
Just one. Wow.
Just go right, get right down to business.
That's great. Okay. Well, this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about baking with Daisy Cakes founder Kim Nelson. Her new cookbook is called Daisy Cakes Bakes, keepsake recipes for Southern layer cakes, pies, cookies, and more. Are you having problems with one of your recipes? Give us a call. We got an expert on the line. Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, coming up at 11:45, we'll talk about a new novel that looks at what it's like to be a woman running for office. That's next on the Ideas Network. But right now, we're talking to Kim Nelson from Daisy Cakes about her new cookbook. Kim, I hear people say all the time that they can't bake. And I'm sure you hear that all the time, too. What do you say to them?
Well, I think if you're really a good cook... If you're a really good cook, you're used to, like, doing a little bit more of this or a little less that, or, you know, you have you eyeball things.
Sure.
You know, baking is an exact science. So if it says that you need to use 2 cups of all-purpose flour, you should not use less than 2 cups or more than 2 cups. And then you should use all-purpose flour as opposed to cake flour or wheat flour or another type of flour, unless, of course, it's gluten-free. That, you know, will
right,
work.
Right.
But, and then, you know, if it, you can't eyeball a teaspoon of salt or a tablespoon of baking powder or whatever you're putting in your recipe, you really do need to measure it and measure it precisely. And I think another thing, and this is, I guess, with any recipe, but especially with baking, you want to read the entire recipe from start to finish.
Oh, yes.
So that you know what, you know what's coming, you know, on, and you don't want to get to the bottom and go, oh, my gosh, I should have started this cake 2 days ago.
I am guilty. I am totally guilty.
And we all are, because we're just so, I think, excited that we want to hurry up and bake it and hurry so we can hurry up and eat it.
Yep.
But I think it's, you know, it's the precision thing. And also, I'm a firm believer, you know, practice does make perfect. So even Betty Crocker herself probably didn't, you know, have a successful first bake or two. They just have to, and, you know, I think, too, for me personally, cake is easier than cookies. I have a harder time, you know, getting cookies to be cooked the right way, not too hard or burn on the bottom and still raw in the middle kind of thing. I don't know. Cookies are my, not downfall, I would say, but just they just give me a good challenge every now and then.
Well, I think that the results on cookies aren't as exact as cakes for some reason. I found the same thing. So
yeah, they don't. They either, like, they'll run out all over the pan, or, oh, I'll tell you what I have been making lately that I'm just, like, going crazy over. I've made it for the past 3 Sundays in a row, is this big double, well, 2 loaves of challah bread.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking if I get to do another cookbook, I'm going to definitely have to put some breads, yeast breads in it, because I like a little bit of a challenge.
Uh-huh.
And then I mastered it. Like, even the first time, it really did turn out beautifully, and my family loved it. So, and it's, you know, and I think that's part of baking too, don't you? That you get to share the love, and then you get, or even food in general, you baked it, you've made it, and then you hear the oohs and the ahs and
yes.
the accolades, and
yes.
it's like really strokes your ego in a wonderful, warm.
It really does. Yep, I agree with you. Now, you're talking about exact measurements. Now, I noticed that you do say, you know, cups of flour. Do you get into weighing it at all?
I don't. And I know, like, Alton Brown is really big on that, on weighing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would just tear my nerves completely up. Get out the scale and weigh, you know, put a piece of wax paper down and tear the little button and then put the whatever I was weighing. I don't know. That would really push my limits.
Well, I think if you've baked enough, you know how to get that flour into the cup without packing it too much or not being enough. So
oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I just scoop it and do a little loose shimmy of it, the
yep.
cup, and then, oh, and that's probably, I know that Martha always scrapes hers off with a nice, you know,
yeah.
sharp, straight
yeah.
edge, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, I just kind of give it a little shake, and mm-hmm. and then also, I'm kind of impatient when it comes to certain things, so like I just, most recipes, I'll just dump, you know, I do the cream and I cream the butter and the sugar, scrape down, put the eggs in, blend that, scrape it down and around, but then when it comes time to put the mix in, and the liquid, I just dump it. I put the mix, I put
Ooh.
The liquid, boom, let it go.
Wow, you are an
and
adventurer. It obviously,
well,
it works.
I feel this sense of urgency, right?
Get it done.
Reason, whatever the next project is, I got to hurry up and get on to it.
Right, get it done. We got an email from Dawn in Troy Valley, Minnesota. She wants to know, how do you differentiate between using baking soda or baking powder and vice versa when you're making up your own recipes?
Oh, wow. That is an awesome question,
isn't
Dawn.
It?
Mm-hmm. I think, wow, baking, like I'm doing a yellow layer cake. Our yellow layer cake does not have any baking soda in it. It is all baking powder and salt, and that is with cake flour. Now, that might be where the differential is, because I think most times when you're using all-purpose flour, if I'm thinking clearly on everything, most times you're going to have a little bit of bacon powder and bacon soda in that all-purpose flour and some salt. But that's I don't think you absolutely cannot use them interchangeably.
No, for sure.
And maybe it depends on the fineness, because, you know, cake flour is like sifted 27 times.
It's very fine.
So it's much finer.
Mm-hmm.
it'll get a softer, more delicate crumb to the cake as opposed to the all-purpose flour. And then also the pound cake that I make is cake flour and just salt. There's no baking powder or baking soda in it, which is interesting. But when you're making up yourself, I guess it's a matter of, just trial and error. But I think it would be safe to say that if you're using cake flour, that you can omit the baking soda and just figure out the baking powder amount.
Sure. And Dawn, you know, I know here in Wisconsin, we go to our UW Extension offices a lot for things like this. So maybe in Minnesota she could try talking to someone there at an extension or maybe even the university. They might be able to help her with some rules. So,
yeah, that's a good idea. I did not go to culinary school, so I am not a food scientist expert about things like that. I only know just from, what I've baked that, and I've never really thought about that, to tell you the truth, but now that you pointed it out, I think, and I'll tell you this, like the yellow cake has about 4 cups of flour. If you're breaking the recipe down, there's like 3 teaspoons. Which is a tablespoon of baking powder in there, so it maybe that's a good bit. But they work beautifully and they're so light and airy.
Right. Yeah. And it is science. So yes. Things you have to experiment with. So thank you for that question, Dawn. That was really good. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can email ideas@wpr.org. Are your recipes good for beginners, do you think?
I think maybe some, I wonder, I think more the layer cakes, like the first 3 recipes are layer cakes. It's a yellow layer cake, chocolate yellow layer cake, and the red velvet. I think those are good to start out on. There's some cookies in there, those gingerbread cookies that I've literally made tens of thousands of. Those are fairly easy, but of course you need a rolling pin that might require a little bit of skill, but if you don't ever start learning, you won't ever know how to do it. I love to roll dough and I love to roll cookies and things because of the, that's kind of like therapeutic to me, rolling, or biscuits.
Yeah.
I love to roll biscuits.
Okay.
But I think there's some, and like there's some chocolate sauce recipe that's super easy in there. There's some strawberries, which strawberry season is, we've got lots of strawberries around right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some strawberry sauce. There's a few things you can make, and the ice cream. The ice cream recipes, I think, are fairly easy, too, as opposed to, something that you actually bake, just little, cooking on the stove or churning the...
Kim, we actually have a caller, Pesha in Madison, who has something to say about baking powder and baking soda. Hi, Pesha.
Okay. Hello. So the difference between baking powder and baking soda is that baking soda is only going to fizz, to bubble up, if you combine it with some kind of acid, like molasses or lemon juice or brown sugar. Baking powder has the baking soda mixed with a dry acidic ingredient. So it'll react without any acid in your recipe.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Wonderful.
So like the red velvet cake then, because it has both baking powder, baking soda, and, I know we weren't talking about salt, and it has vinegar in it.
Right. Yep. Well, see, we have really intelligent people listening to our show who can
tell
us these
that.
Things. Thank you, Pesha. That was so nice of you to call and let us know about that. Now, you make a point in your book about having the right tools, and it's really important. Why? Explain why that is important to have those tools.
I think as far as, being in the kitchen, people just want to, maybe make do. But if you think about, the auto mechanic, he's got to have the proper tools, or the carpenter has to have the right tools, or, whatever profession you're doing, you have to have the right things to make it work. And even in your home kitchen, it makes your life so much easier if you have, say, a microplane zester to zest some chocolate or zest some citrus with, right? Or if you have the right kind of scraper spatula to scrape the bowls, for your butter and sugar blend, or if you have, the right cake pans to bake those cakes, or the proper sheet pan to cook your cookies on, or a rolling pin. It just makes all the difference in the world, and I think it makes it more enjoyable, too, because you're not, trying to make do with something that isn't actually the right item that you should be using, or the right instrument that you should be using for you know, if you're icing the cake, an icing spatula. I know some people like a flat one. I like my offset one better.
Cause me too.
I like it easy, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so much easier. I think you got that little, you're not getting your finger in it because you're level with it. You're raised up above. And you know, to the proper pan to bake, you know, brownies in or whatever, you know, if it's that kind of thickness that you're looking for. So I do. I think that is so important. And I know not everybody has a, you know, like a KitchenAid or stand mixer, but wow, it just
totally. You're preaching to the choir. I've had one for years.
And yeah, they're the best.
They're wonderful.
Aren't they?
They're wonderful. Well, we've got a caller online. Bobby in Greenfield has a question for you. Hi, Bobby.
Hi. I have a question that's a little bit off topic, I think. For years, I've been baking rhubarb bread, using fresh rhubarb when I can, but also freezing it in pieces, you know, half an inch big pieces. But I've lately noticed that when I use the frozen rhubarb, my bread is wet, moist. I bake longer, then the top is too done. You get the idea. Can you make a suggestion?
Well, I'll tell you, in the recipes that didn't make it in the book, I had a strawberry cake recipe that made like a strawberry bundt cake or pound cake, and you absolutely could not use frozen strawberries. It would not work. The cake would be sad every time and soggy every time. And, I mean, it tasted okay. It was a little gummy because it was never completely, it's like it never got done.
Sure.
And you know what? I guess maybe for baking, you know, something delicate like bread even, then maybe that's the same principle as far as having the frozen strawberries and thawing them. They're just too mushy. You know, they get mushy.
Sure.
Maybe the same thing with the rhubarb happens.
Bobby, do you actually thaw your rhubarb before you use it, or do you put it in frozen?
I don't. I've put it in frozen.
Okay.
And I've tried using a little bit less of that, a little bit more flour. Somehow or other, I think as it thaws, there's extra moisture and it affects the bread.
Sure. Have you tried?
I have a cookbook that's a fabulous cookbook from Grand Central Baking in Portland, Oregon. And she says, rhubarb is too delicious to use just in summer. Freeze it.
Yeah.
So I have been doing that, but not with good results.
Oh, because I've used it in a cake that I make with strawberries and rhubarb and not had a problem, but it's more of a coffee cake, so it's flatter. And not had a problem. What about now, has the rhubarb been in the freezer for a little bit longer than?
Not this last time. This last time it was, that's kind of what I thought too.
Yeah.
Maybe it's getting too much moisture,
sure,
you know, from the freezing. No, this last time I got it fresh from my college roommate and I used it. And then about 2 weeks later I tried with the stuff I had frozen. And that time it was soggy after just 2 weeks.
Well, Bobby, what if you thawed it like in a colander, let it thaw, and then, you know, and kind of like jiggle the colander to get, you know.
The moisture,
And then toss it with a little of the flour before putting it into the batter. So it's kind of like has some suspension like raisins in a raisin cake. And it's not heavy and frozen and it's not released because you've thawed it and got a lot of that moisture out. And then just give it a little toss in some of the flour. Maybe that would work.
I think that's a great idea to try that, or even wrap it up in a towel and squish that moisture out. So, good luck, Bobby. If anybody has any suggestions for Bobby, please give us a call or send us an email, 1-800-642-1234. The email is ideas@wpr.org. And thanks for calling for that about that. Now, before we get any further, Kim, you sent us some recipes that we can share with our listeners, and we have put them on our website, and I believe that they're on the Ideas Network Facebook page too. And along with those recipes, you sent a recipe for pan grease. And I'm like, what is that all about? And I opened it up and I figured it out. But why don't you explain what we're talking about there?
I'm going to tell you what I saw just yesterday on Twitter, because I follow lots of food related postings. But it is equal parts of oil and flour. And then you can use butter, margarine, or like Crisco, vegetable shortening. So it's, you know, it's perfect to keep in a little airtight container in your refrigerator, especially if you do a lot of baking and especially during the holidays. You just want to give it a little whisk. So in your mixer, you're going to blend together if it's one cup of flour, one cup of oil, and one cup of Crisco or margarine or butter, whatever you're using, blend that all up, and that's what you want to use to coat your pans with. And it is perfect, and it saves you so much money. And it's, you just have your little pastry brush, and you dip it, you know, give it, you want to make sure, because it will separate, you want to give it just a little whisk, stir it up, make sure it's, you know, well blended, then brush it in your pans as pan grease. And just yesterday, or the day before, on Food52 on Twitter, they posted make your own pan coating, and they had it with, I think it said, a half a cup of oil, a half a cup of butter or margarine, and a half a cup of flour.
So,
and that works
same
great
thing.
Gluten-free flour, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a huge money saver, and it's just so easy, and it works beautifully.
It sounds like it might be soft enough, too, unlike, you know, butter that's a little bit harder to get into the nooks and crannies. And then you don't have to flour, right?
Put no,
flour.
It's all in there together. Yeah, and we do use Crisco for ours, because if you're going to put it back in the refrigerator, the butter or the margarine are going to firm back up, but the Crisco stays nice and consistent. And maybe that's why they only gave the half cup recipe of each one, because you'll probably use most of that within one or two bakings.
Sure.
Anyway.
Well, we do have a caller, Vicki in Lake Mills, who I think can tell us about rhubarb. Hi, Vicki.
Oh, good.
Yes, I have used frozen rhubarb for making muffins. My solution is to drain the rhubarb, and it might take an hour or two, and then I take 3 tablespoons of the drained liquid and add it to the muffins. This is for a recipe that calls for 2 cups of rhubarb and makes 24 muffins.
Oh, well, that sounds like a good idea. So, Vicki, do you use it instead of some of the liquid that you put in the muffins?
No, I do not.
So it's addition to that.
Right, and
okay.
it seems to turn out fine.
Okay.
It has 1 cup of buttermilk in the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like a good recipe. Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate that. Hopefully that'll help our other caller out. So let's talk about one of those other recipes that you sent us. It's the Miss Geraldine's Italian Cream Cake, and that looks so good.
Oh, my gosh. It is a wonderful cake, and it is so it's light because of the texture of the crumb, but then you just get that nice consistency with the coconut and the pecans, too. I mean, we're just so big about putting the pecans in, keep them in the freezer and bring them out whenever you want to make some brownies or a cake or something and put them on the outside. It makes it look really pretty, too, on your icing. But that cake is wonderful, and it's my mother's best friend's recipe, and it's a beautiful cake. It's so tall because it's 3 really big layers. So it's a whopper of a cake, and it is beautiful for the holidays, and I like it too. If you even just maybe toast some coconut for the outside, I think that, you know, just adds a nice depth of flavor to
mm-hmm.
that cake.
That looks beautiful.
It is. It's a beautiful cake, and it really is. It's just so tasty.
And again, that's on our website, so you can just go to WPR.org/Larry, and you'll see that it's actually, I think, either the first or second one on there. And let's see here. Oh, the other one you gave us was the Gracious Plenty, which is a saying that you have in the book, too. Mm-hmm. Peach pie. Now, there's a lot of peaches this time of year.
Yes, that cake, oh, my gosh. I mean, that pie is so, that crust is so nice. And there's several, I think I've got like 7 different pie crust recipes
yes.
in there. But so if you can make a sweet one or a not-so-sweet one, just depending on your personal preference. But that is thin enough because of the chic pan that you bake it in, that it gets just that nice crunch to the bottom and to the top of the pie dough. It is really, really good. And then, you know, right underneath where the peaches are against the dough is kind of that soggy. So it's like the best of both worlds.
Best
in my
of both,
opinion.
Yes. Well, it's got a nice picture here too, that the crust does look yummy. What is it that people do wrong when they make a crust? Because that seems to stop a lot of people.
I think, one, they overwork it.
Right.
It make it it's tough, which you just can't do, right? You just want to, if you're doing it in your food processor or even in your mixer with the, I use the paddle, not the dough hook. I will use the paddle because it brings it together faster,
mm-hmm.
and they're not ever working it. Like the challah bread is like 7 to 10 minutes with the dough hook. I don't do that for pie dough. You just want to hurry up and bring it all together. And I think it's important, too, that I like to have my whatever fat I'm using, I like it to be cold.
Yes.
And I like if I'm using ice water, it needs to be ice water. It needs to be cold. And, you know, if you're doing it in your food processor, it's about 3 tablespoons, I think. But you don't want to overdo that either. So just, you know, gradual little bits of water, of ice water at a time. And then bring it out, flatten it out. If you need to chill it, that's fine. I don't always do that because I'm in a hurry. So I will, you know, go right into the rolling out of it. And, you know, on a nicely floured surface. And again, just don't overwork that dough just till it comes together in a ball, and that's it.
Yeah, and I actually refrigerate mine after I mix it up for a good half hour or sometimes overnight. Yeah, it works really well. Mark in Winneconne called to say that when freezing rhubarb, don't bag it. Place it on a cookie sheet first, then freeze it, and then put it in a bag. So, yeah, and we did actually hear some things like that yesterday. We were talking to some ladies who do preserving, and that's one of the suggestions that they had mentioned, too. Now, before, we're going to need to get going really quick, but I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about your lemon curd.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that looks so good. Now, did I see somewhere that you're actually selling that, distributing it?
That just never came to fruition, but it actually... I make it in small batches in my grandmother's yellow enamel pot, and one batch would make 14 half pints.
Oh.
And that just wasn't enough to be able to meet any type of demand if
sure.
we should have it. So
mm-hmm.
kind of had to, and I did talk to Whole Foods about that in my local area, but it wasn't going to be mm-hmm. A doable thing for us because of the time that it takes to crack all those eggs and separate them. And
yeah, sometimes quality over quantity is where you have to go.
Yes, absolutely. It's so good, though, and it freezes beautifully, too. So
okay.
if you want to make it and freeze it in little containers, it works very nicely.
Great. Well, I'm definitely going to try that. Kim, it has been a real treat.
Thank you, Jill.
Pun intended, to talk with you today. Hope we can do it again.
It was my pleasure.
Okay,
thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Kim. We've been talking with Kim Nelson, the founder of Daisy Cakes. Her new cookbook is called Daisy Cakes Bakes, keepsake recipes for Southern layer cakes, pies, cookies, and more. And I highly suggest it. It's a really, really good cookbook. Well, author Joe Piazza is up with us next, and we're going to be talking about her new book, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win. It's about a woman running for office. Hope you can stay with us on the Ideas Network.